So good morning. How are you, Kelly?
I'm great. How are you this morning?
I'm great. Thanks for joining me. So this is Colossum, and this is our interview series. And I'm going to welcome Kelly Waters from Western Rise. But before we get started, I love to always frame the conversation for our listeners and our audience. Colossum is a purpose-driven branding agency for the outdoor industry. And purpose-driven companies go beyond the role of offering a service or a product to develop programs that have a social or an environmental impact. Social entrepreneurship is bringing more business or more meaning to business, and our consumers, our society is pleading for that. So we believe in the quadruple bottom line, which can be expressed as profit, people, planet, and purpose. Four. That's the quad. Yes, the four. Yes. So that's a mouthful. So I'm going to breathe for just a moment. So Kelly, I'm going to give you a little introduction here. So Kelly is a fourth generation entrepreneur. She earned her master's from the University of Arts in Philadelphia and has over 10 years experience in operations, logistics, finance, team building and general management at both nonprofit and for-profit businesses. In 2014, Kelly founded Western Rise with her husband, Will Waters. Over the years, she's held almost every position at the company. And today, as CEO, she oversees a fast-growing venture-backed business with triple-digit growth, a supply chain across four continents, and distribution over 37 countries. Holy cow. Wow. Yeah. You are also named as Outside Magazine's one of 10 top 10 women to know in the outdoor industry. And you are an alumni of the Telluride Venture Accelerator Program and now a mentor.
Yes.
You got your hands full, Kelly.
Yes. Yes, I do.
Yeah. So let's
Yeah.
start with this.
Thank
I
you.
think everyone defines purpose differently. I just spoke to the quadruple bottom line. In your world, how do you define purpose?
I think I define purpose a little bit more loosely than like a company specific thing. The way that I define purpose is the thing that makes you want to get out of bed in the morning. So, at a company or at your job, like that can be, it can be career driven, but it doesn't necessarily have to be aligned with the mission and vision of the company. Like the company's purpose and its reason of existing doesn't necessarily have to line up with your purpose and reason for existing, the things that drive you and excite you throughout your day. They can also be, personal. I get excited to get up and go for a 20-minute run without the kids in the morning. Like there's different stuff, but yeah, I loosely define it as that thing that gets you excited to get out and do what you do in a day.
And even in the tough days when it's not necessarily exciting, yeah.
Especially that is like the key part of purpose is especially in the tough days when you know that 90% of your day is something you don't want to do. Your purpose is the thing that gets you out and keeps you driving through when it's really tough.
Do you have it for yourself, a reminder somewhere, a sticky on the wall or the bathroom mirror, on those
That's
tough
a good
days?
question.
How do you remember?
That's a great question. I do goal setting. My husband and I both do goal setting. We do it annually and then we break it up by quarters and months with personal goals and professional goals. So, I have it on notes in my phone of, my goals for the month, for the week, things like that that help drive me. But sometimes, a lot of times, I swing back to like things that bring me joy and happiness. And when it's really tough, like just making sure you've got 20 minutes for something that brings joy really helps balance out the crazy a little bit.
That's a great tool. And I love the on the phone or even as your screensaver, like in that moment where you need to take a breath before you react. Like,
yeah, I can't have it on sticky notes. I have way too many sticky notes everywhere. Yeah. It would be lost.
I have a wall out of view in here with my reminders that will bring me that joy moment, that, you know, take a moment. Yep. Yeah. Great. So you've been at Western Rise for eight years now. Where are we at?
Yeah, which seems kind of crazy to say. You were saying 2014. So we started Western Rise as a side project. Both Will and I were still working full time in 2014 when we started the line. Mm-hmm. And we ran it as a side project. We both had full time jobs until 2018. So from, and then it really morphed from there. So in my mind, I think of the start of the brand as 2017, but yes, it was an at the dinner table from 5 p.m. to midnight project from 2014 to about 2017, 2018.
As I think many projects begin that way.
Yeah.
You know, unless you have someone throwing money at you and the ability to know where it will go. Great. So although it is, you know, it's been a decade, and I know your history as a guide and our commonality of the Vail Valley. What do you see as pivotal in the past decade?
That's a great question. And it's changed so much. I think, you know, COVID was obviously a very pivotal moment for the outdoor industry, but overall the industry, and I'm speaking specifically from an apparel background. So if you're in, you know, hard goods or more sport specific stuff, this probably wouldn't apply, but there's been a huge change in the rise of e-com and e-com supported tech platforms that had made it really easy to start new businesses. Specifically, like 2012 to 2017, there was this window, and the rise of everybody being on social media and the blend of working from home and integrating that work into your personal life and not having that separation. There's so many things that have changed that really changed the way that our days look. Mm-hmm. And honestly, how we engage with brands, how we engage with each other, mm-hmm. that it's hard to pinpoint like one specific thing, because especially in our world, being a direct to consumer brand, like it changes every 6 months.
Well, it kind of seems like, I like to think that the universe served it up. It stacked these multiple opportunities that when put together in that 2012 to 2017, that changed the face of the way you do business.
Yeah. Yeah. For us, I think that one of the interesting things that I've seen specifically over the last 10 years in our industry is I don't want to say like isolation, but like the blend of the knowledge of outdoor performance into lifestyle. So we saw it first with women like Lululemon and Athleta paved the way back in the 90s. And by the time we got into this decade, women, you and I, like we had access to performance in almost any store that you walked into. I expect stretch in my pants. I expect to be able to get performance in a top that I can also wear to work. And over the last decade specifically, we've seen that come into menswear. Mm-hmm. Menswear is typically behind the but it's occurred a lot faster, and part of that is because of COVID, and part of it is because women took so long to do it, and then once it got there, it's easier to adopt across all channels in menswear, mm-hmm. because mm-hmm. you can go in and say, you know, you should expect this, mm-hmm. And so we've really seen almost the emergence of an entire new category of clothing in both menswear and womenswear, which we call performance lifestyle, but it's really impacted how we think of the outdoors and how we think of our day-to-day life. Like I don't have to have specific hiking pants to go on a hike.
I love your inception story. So
yeah.
I know your duffel bag story. So tell our audience like the inception of this, because now I'm looking at Western Rise going, can I have that? Like, I don't see that in women's wear, but I see what you've done is unique. So tell the inception story.
Yeah. So I met my co-founder is also my partner, my life partner. And we met in Vail in 2011. It was a while ago. And we were living very much the Colorado life, multiple outdoor activities, jobs that were guides. I managed an art gallery at the time. We had really high-end clients because we were working out of Beaver Creek in the Vail Valley. And what we found was that I could go from outdoor activities with friends or guiding and transition into meeting clients or meeting with friends in town. And Will couldn't. He had like 5 changes of clothes in the back of the car, and he had his hiking pants for the river and hiking pants for hiking and ones for climbing. And then he had different pants for meeting with clients. And I remember one day he pulled up to a meeting, he had pants that were hanging out. He had rolled them up in the window because he had gotten them wet in the river, and he really needed them to dry by his meeting. So he was driving from Eagle in Vail, trying to get them to dry on the highway coming in. And I was like, this is how people die on the interstate. Like, it's not safe. And it, you know, the other thing is we were packing him up to leave for Australia because he was going to do a double ski season. And I was helping him pack up his stuff. And I was like, you have literally 7 pairs of pants that do the same thing. And you only get one bag. Like, what are you going to take with you? And he's like, well, I have these ones are for fishing, and these ones are for hiking, and these ones are for whoever knows what else. Uh-huh. And I was like, right, but you won't wear any of these outside of that specific sport. Do you have anything that you can wear for multiple of those? And he's like, no. Yeah. And that was really how it started. Mm-hmm. The other portion that I left out of this is he's a third generation textile developer. So his grandfather invented marine carpet. His father runs an industrial textiles company that makes almost anything you touch in a boat, a golf cart, a prefab home. And Will ran R&D for them for years and years and years.
In his blood.
So it's very much in his blood. So he knows the fabric and materials that are possible. And we were looking at this problem when we were packing him up, and we're like, there's no brand that makes just clothes that you can put in one bag, and when you get there, do 7 different things with them. Like, the goal is to maximize your day with as little amount as possible.
And I read the own less, do more. Love that.
Yes.
Okay. Great. And so I looked at something. So as you developed your customer, mm-hmm. and who you're projecting to over the years, has your customer changed?
A little bit.
Added new items for a new customer?
I would say our customers evolved. I can't say that they've changed, because honestly, like, we have amazing customers. I have customers that purchased in 2014 that are still with the brand. Mm. So no, they haven't changed. Like, they're still there, but I think we speak to a different aspect of their life. We started with a little bit more outdoors roots because that was the industry that we came from. Mm-hmm. And based on customer feedback over the years, we've evolved into more the lifestyle aspect of it. Mm-hmm. So right now we specifically make performance clothing for everything that you do when you leave your door in the morning. So we think of the outdoors as not a sport specific thing, but once you leave your front door, what does the outdoors look for you? Whether you're in Manhattan or mm-hmm. San Francisco or Telluride, they're wildly different. But what we build for is hopefully the intersection to allow you to maximize your day in any of those locations.
And which is so smart, because that gives you multiple audience members. We've done flipped it. Before it was outdoor first, lifestyle second, and now it's lifestyle first. Outdoor is a piece of that.
It's a
part in terms of who is your target market and who might be interested, all of them apply.
Right.
Yeah. Right. Wonderful. So you were speaking about starting a direct to consumer and how there's some opportunities in terms of technology, but also takes a lot of money. And so what I love about you is that you are very innovative and very resourceful. You say that you have 9 different debt options and 2 times more debt than equity. Tell me about that.
I think part of this comes from being a fourth generation entrepreneur and not starting a company in the Valley or in New York, where we just started from a standpoint of profitability. Like, why are you going to start a company if it, you know, financially doesn't make sense? And also where we started didn't have a lot of the equity financing options that you have when you start in some of the larger cities. And so we had to explore different options there. Mm-hmm. So yes, we have grown a little bit slower because we have taken less capital. And so we've focused on profitable growth and slower growth. And we have been able to pair different debt partners over the years. We don't have 9 right now, but over the years.
4 years, yeah. All at the same time.
Lots of different options to get us there. Mm-hmm. And you're right, like any consumer company, not just direct to consumer, any consumer company takes cash. You have to buy product. You have to get your brand out in front of people. Mm-hmm. And so it's a lot of it is just planning and having good planning tools and cash forecasting tools and being creative on how you're going to scale it and support that growth.
And how did you find these options? Have you had advisors or mentors along the way, or is this part of your accelerator program? It's pretty daunting. I hear it a lot from my early stage growth stages. I need it. I don't know where to begin.
Yeah. And honestly, when I advise companies, that's one of the biggest things that I advise on is places to where you can find capital at the different stages where you are. It was a little bit of both. Part of it was mentors and advisors. I have an advisor that's a CEO of an outdoor company that gave us a bridge loan at one point in time to purchase our inventory for summer. They also introduced us to lenders, to banks. A little bit of it came through TVA. I would say probably more the knowledge on the equity funding side came through there, but a lot of it has been networking, reaching out to other colleagues on Twitter and asking them, how do you do it? You know, when you were this size, who did you work with? And reaching out and having lots of conversations. I have almost as many conversations on debt provider sides as you do on equity provider sides, because you have to find somebody that's the right fit, mm-hmm. that works with you. And then kind of just making sure that you pieced them together in the stage and size that we were. And as we've gotten bigger, we've grown up and worked with larger partners as we've gotten bigger.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Right. And so you also said 2 things inside of that that are interesting to me is like, how are you doing this in your day? How are you finding the time, taking the time to build relationships, to look for resources? So I hear often as the leadership, you have an endless to-do list, mm-hmm. but I know in order to grow, you need to be the CEO. You need to build and cultivate those relationships. So over the years, how have you designed your workday to allow that to happen?
That's a great question. And to be candid, I am not a natural networker. I would happily work on the business any day of the week than be out networking and doing all of the stuff that facilitates those relationships and that growth. A lot of the things that I have done is kind of balanced that because I know that about myself. So mm-hmm. I send out investor updates on a monthly basis. They're consistent every month, so our investors can track growth, and it's not all over the place based on what's going well. It's sometimes it's good, sometimes it's bad, but the numbers are the same all the time. Mm-hmm. And I do the same thing with our network. So I send out quarterly updates. And as I talk to people in our network, whether they be lawyers or bankers or investors, family offices, just like cool people in the space, brand friends, if they're interested, I add them to the update list. Mm. And I found that has really helped and it doesn't work for everybody, but it's helped me be able to stay in touch with people that I wouldn't necessarily be reaching out to on Twitter or LinkedIn on a weekly or monthly basis, and it allows us to stay in touch and facilitate conversations. So I sent one out yesterday, and it's much a back and forth. I get people coming in and saying like, hey, I saw you had an ask. how can I help? And then also, hey, I saw you tackled this. I have a company in my portfolio. Can I have them chat with you? And it just, it opens up a lot more conversations. So for me, it's just being consistent about that communication and making sure I'm sending it regularly. It helps kind of bypass the fact that, like, I will never be a Twitter savant. You will never see me on Twitter four times a day. I don't know
how you're even on Twitter at all. It's way too ADD for me. I can't, it's too much.
Can't do it.
It's too much.
I can't do it. Will is much better at that. Like, he manages brand and social. So that's,
I've seen some conversations about, you know, how your different personalities, how you divide and conquer. Mm-hmm. But what I really hear there that I love, and I'm looking like, were you with a CEO at one point or COO at one point?
I was, yes.
You like systems. So what you just shared was, I created a system where I send a report out regularly. It has a template. I don't people get so stuck on reinventing the wheel and content creation is create it once, ask permission to share it. They want it.
Yeah. You have to do a double opt-in, make sure they want to know.
Yeah. But keeping top of mind, my three favorite words in branding, consistent, memorable, polished. Mm-hmm. So that you have created something that works to your personality, works to your audience, and keeps you top of mind. I think that's brilliant. And they can sort of choose what they want to engage with.
Yeah. And to be fair, there's lots of things that I could do better on. I could be more present on LinkedIn. I could be more present on Twitter. But I find at the end of the day, I have those relationships there that are valuable. Mm-hmm. And I prioritize closer relationships and calls with people over social interaction in that way.
Quality over quantity in my eyes. Yeah. Yeah. And that is another thing. It was just brought to my point that, like, really in the US, we are on social. The world is not necessarily on social. And I think that's an interesting conversation to have. It's not I don't believe it's a good or a bad, it's a choice. But in terms of how we engage with our audience, that has got me thinking.
I think it depends on where you are in the world, because I have a very global team. They are all very active on social.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
That
was just sort of brought to me to consider. And now I'm going to look into what does that mean? And, you know, I love different perspectives because it makes me do something like this. I say the brain is a meaning making machine and it's now going to try and solve that puzzle in its downtime.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, so you've come through a couple of different stages. Actually, you said at one point you've grown slower. In my perspective, you've grown quite fast. If you look from 2018 to 2022.
Yeah, our CAGR is pretty high.
What's our CAGR? What does CAGR mean?
It's your growth over a period of time. Okay. So not like a growth over a quarter or over a year, but if you're measuring the growth over like a 3 or 5 year period.
Okay. Is that an acronym? I don't know.
It is.
That's okay. I'll put it in the show notes. No problem.
What does it mean? Compounded annual growth rate.
There you go. Okay. Thank you. So when we talk about the different stages that you've gone through, early stage, growth stage, and I frequently look for where do founders get stuck? What are some examples that you've seen of where you got stuck and how you got around it?
We've gotten stuck plenty of times.
Of course.
That's everybody.
Oh, you said somewhere like everything starts as an idea is always a problem.
Yes. Yeah. I am an operator by, like, that's just how I focus. So Will is creative and head of brand. So he gets stuck in very different ways than I get stuck. I have most certainly gotten stuck on supply chain. How are we going to source this? Great. We had 300% growth this quarter. How are we going to get in enough inventory to continue to scale and grow this? How are we going to pay for that? Those are certainly areas I get stuck on a regular basis. I think for him, he gets stuck sometimes figuring out how he's going to continue to engage with customers in a meaningful way and reach out to them authentically as social media changes and evolves and what that looks like. That is something he certainly is always trying to figure out and unlock the next door.
Right. Yeah.
But I think you can get stuck in a lot of different things. Like, we could have gotten stuck and stayed as an outdoor brand and not listened to our customers in 2018. And they very clearly voted in surveys and they voted with their dollars, and we had to pivot the company into a performance lifestyle company. And we could have gotten stuck and not done that. But we chose not to, and it was terrifying. But it ended up being cool.
You kind of said, hey, it's not about us, it's about our customer.
And yeah, well, it's always about your customer. Yes.
Right, but people often start because they're trying to fix something in their own life.
Yeah.
Or they see an opportunity I'm good at doing. And once you start doing, you realize it's a whole different beast to own a business. There is a many facets of it. And so do you evolve for the customer while not forgetting yourself? So you and Will live inside this company. And
yeah,
for you also, you're growing with your company and, you now have family. It evolves.
I think you've just brought up a really good point that a lot of early stage founders struggle with, is that you are not your company. Yes, you're the founder and you lead the company, but at the end of the day, and maybe this is just because I grew up in entrepreneurial families, everybody in a company is replaceable, including the founders and the CEOs. And if you're doing your job really well, you're replaceable sooner rather than later. And so your job is to service the growth and the success of the company. Mm-hmm. And keeping that separate, I think, is really healthy from a mental capacity of not getting in the swings of the up and downs because there's lots of bumps in the road in a startup. And it also keeps in mind perspective of, your job and what you're supposed to be doing to help support the company's growth.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you have to get out of the way.
You do. Yeah. And it's easier said than done. I most certainly have failed at that many times, not getting out of the way. I have a tendency to want to own everything, but that's where having fantastic advisors and people that will tell you the candid truth and being able to receive criticism is invaluable, because you need people that can come in and say, hey, you are in the weeds, or hey, you shouldn't be doing this. Like, somebody else needs to be doing this. You need to be focusing on X, Y, Z over here. And being able to hear that is crucial in not getting into the weeds of things.
Mm-hmm. And to know that they have the ability to do that because you have trust built between the two of you.
Yeah, absolutely.
Great. Yeah, totally. I love that. So I saw, first you said you have your team is global. And I saw, so you work virtually, but I also saw you mentioned that you come together also regularly and how effective that is. Why do you do that? Why is it effective?
Because there's things that get lost not sitting next to each other and chatting about your life and having those interim conversations between the project. So, we still try and facilitate those on Slack, and, I follow people on our colleagues on social, and I know what's going on in their families and things, but you lose a lot of that when you're not next to each other. And so getting together and going for a hike, or getting everybody together in one place to do strategy meetings and go out and share a meal together, I think brings a lot of that camaraderie together that is helpful when you're working on projects together. It builds empathy. It builds understanding. It helps everybody understand the missions and the goals. And there's just a lot of personal development that happens when you do it in person.
Mm-hmm. And I think that culture piece is really important. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. They know what you're up to. And yeah. I heard you say you act like a larger business than you are. This was a tip. I know I've gone down the rabbit hole, but I love that. So I frequently, in early stage, I have seasonal clients and they sort of shut everything off for 6 months. I'm like, you can't really do that. You need to think like a year-round brand, not a seasonal brand. Mm-hmm. Just because the weather changes doesn't mean your assets go away, nor your expenses.
Yeah.
And so when I saw you say, you know, acting like a larger business than you are, it allows you to have systems in place for stress tests. So how did you discover that?
We've always kind of done that. I mean, there are certain things that we certainly run smaller. Like if you got into our back end, we have certain things that are, we're still a small business. So there's certain things that, you know, aren't in place, but a lot of it came from us running it at night and not being able to get into the weeds to do everything manually. We had to set up processes and systems mm-hmm. in order to get that done so that we mm-hmm. could delegate it and have somebody yeah. else step in and do that. Mm-hmm. And it's also, I'm just a believer in systems. Okay. And I think that having the proper ones in place help prevent stumbling blocks and roadblocks that you don't need to go through because somebody else has already been through that. So if you can learn from others mm-hmm. and put processes in place to avoid those, it really helps streamline that process of growth.
Mm-hmm. It also allows that piece where you're saying to where you can replace yourself.
Yes.
I think it's a different mindset, I believe, in entrepreneurship is that, you know, many people think it's my baby, but the first thing I want to do is work myself out of it and really trust my team. Like accidents happen. Vacations should happen.
Yeah.
What occurs when you step away and how does your business change?
Yeah.
So I mean, it is
my baby, but you know, I also have human children and I hope to not be wiping their bottoms when they're 20. Like there's stages in businesses, like there are stages in human development. And early on, yeah, you're going to have your hand in everything. I ran all of our CX up until like 2016. It came into my Gmail account. It was insane. But, you know, there, as you grow up, there are certain things that you need to be able to pass on for the company to actually mature and develop the way that it needs to. Mm-hmm. So part of that is just knowing when that's happening. And I think historically, probably we could all hire faster. but that's, you know, kind of the nature of the beast. But getting those systems and processes in place allows you, when that time comes, for you to be able to pass that off to somebody else. Mm-hmm. And know that it's going to continue to run the way that it needs to run.
Mm-hmm. And I know because you shared that you have personal goals and business goals and these mm-hmm. updates regularly, that I suspect that helps you and your team to recognize when the time comes.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely.
You don't miss it.
Uh-huh. Well, sometimes you miss it
and you're like in
sometimes
the weeds going, Oh, yeah, let me go back. I was supposed to do that last quarter. I mean, I have a wish list of as my company grows, when we get this one can happen. You can check the box.
Yeah.
If you haven't already created the future in your mind, in your dream, you won't recognize it when it arrives.
Well, that's the important thing of goal setting and mission setting for a company, though, is like everything. And as you talked about, you know, the triple bottom line of everything is pushing towards the mission and vision of the company, but setting up your goals annually and setting them up quarterly and then breaking them down into key performance indicators allows everybody to know, hey, we hit it. And now we get to move on to X and, you know, we get to celebrate. And
I was gonna say celebrate. Yeah.
Yeah. You have to be able to celebrate the little wins in the middle because it's a long road. Like companies don't just, I mean, some of them do, but very rarely do companies just, you know, blow up in 12 to 18 months and, right. you know, IPO and move on.
Right. Yeah.
So you have to be able to measure that and celebrate it in the middle. Mm-hmm. And like you said, know when you hit those metrics and you get to level up.
Yeah. Awesome. Perfect. That's a great segue. I'm going to start to wrap us up. So as you think about your future, where do you see Western Rise in, let's say, 20 years?
So our goal with Western Rise is really to build one of the next great American brands. So when I think of Western Rise in 20 years, I think of a brand that embodies the lifestyle of its customer base. So something that's really supporting adventure and travel and being present and engaged in your life and meeting our customers in lots of different places. So being a very omni-channel brand, you'll see us in stores, which you can see us in stores now, but you'll see us online, we'll be at events, and really, really an established presence in the performance lifestyle scene. And, you know, hopefully we would like to see more of an international presence at that stage as well.
Yeah, so. I'm counting on it. Okay. And personally, this is a favorite question of mine. Who are you becoming? So where do you see yourself 20 years from now? Who would you like to be? So as I say, you get to exist in this world and in your company. Where do you see yourself?
I would not presume to know where I'm going to be in 20 years. I barely can predict where I'm going to be in 5, because the world changes quickly. In 20 years, God, I was just thinking, I was like, man, in 20 years, I'm going to have kids in college. It's going to be crazy.
I would love
to be in a position in 20 years where I'm in a position to help grow and support other companies that are going through this stage in their life or in the company's life, and to help support other founders that are growing.
Great.
That's, you know, outside of that, like, I believe in following the unexpected turns in the road. And so I try to leave that loose for fate and opportunity to deliver gifts and unexpected changes.
Fantastic. I love that. That's wonderful. Okay. So we're going to wrap it up with what I call our rapid fire questions. So you don't know these guys, unprepared, and it's designed that way. So tell me about your last outdoor adventure. Just out the door. Doesn't have to be grandiose.
My last outdoor adventure. I took my 2-year-old for a hike last weekend. It was a mixed success.
What did they love and what did they not love so much?
He loves going slow. So we loved finding flowers and finding the flowers that you can blow wishes from and finding the best hiking sticks. And we built a fort in the woods. My outdoor adventures are a lot slower and less intense than they used to be.
Sure.
But they bring as much meaning as they did as when we were hiking 14ers. And
yeah, absolutely. I imagine just sitting and looking at the grass blades around you, like, there's such beauty in it. Like, they're at that level, you know?
They're real short. So they see a whole bunch of different stuff
different
that you
world.
Don't normally notice when you're hiking. You're like, yeah, you're right. That is a really cool rock.
Yeah.
Well spotted.
The detail, the beauty and the detail. Mm-hmm. Wonderful.
Yep.
And how about a top of mind nonprofit?
Oh, so one that is always near and dear to my heart is Western Rivers Conservancy. We have worked with them since day one at Western Rise, but living in the West and having water be such a huge issue here, and it's going to get much rougher before it gets better. The work that they do to support and maintain our waterways and also keep them open for recreational use has been hugely impactful personally to my life and many other people that I know. Mm-hmm. So that's one that always has a sweet spot in my heart.
Wonderful. I'll add that to our show notes. And finally, how about a favorite book or a podcast?
Oh, I have so many good books. So on a podcast, my friend Nick Sharma just started a podcast with Moyes, who's the founder of Native. And if you're in e-commerce, it's just a really fun listen. It's very much them just like chatting back and forth like friends, but talking about real stuff that we deal with in e-com. So that one is really fun that I love.
You know the name of it? Also look it up.
You know what? I'm going to have to look it up for you. Okay. I just have it saved in my
pocket. Sure. No problem. We'll add it again. I'll touch. We can add it. Great.
And recent book that I have really loved is Never Split the Difference. It's Negotiation Tactics from the CIA, essentially. It's like the reverse of getting to yes. It's much simpler. And it's one of the first business books in years that I have read multiple times and find stuff to pull out of it.
Cool. So it's a keeper. My new
favorite. Yes, it is a keeper. I might actually like buy a physical version of it.
Yeah, I always start with an audiobook, and then if I really like it, I buy it.
Yes, yeah. Exactly. Great. Exactly. It's getting to that level. So
Wonderful. Got some new things to add to my list. Well, thanks, Kelly. I feel like we could talk a lot longer, but I'm going to wrap it up for today, and we can continue in the years to come. So thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me. It was really fun.
And keep doing awesome stuff with Western Rise.